Hello, welcome to Money Matters TV. My name is James Chan with Asia Marketing and Management. I'd like to introduce my friend and co-host, Paul Mitchell, the commercial banker. Hi, Paul.
Hi, James. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again. How have you been?
Well, it's been great weather. Spring is finally,
oh, yeah. Finally
arrived. Exactly.
Yeah. It's still pretty cold, actually, in the morning.
Well, blood's running better, I'm excited about the new season.
Yeah, in the spirit of Money Matters, let's talk about something that we have been really discussing over time, but I think it's too important. You see, in this day and age, the gig economy, which is becoming even more normal, like people get downsized, they get laid off.
So what's gig?
Gig, G-I-G, the gig economy, the short-term freelancer economy.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And so people need to, once they are downsized or fired, they have to be on their own, trying to make a living, which is fair, which is important. But then a lot of people, I have noticed, particularly for service providers, when they start calling themselves freelancers, consultants, contractors, whatever, that sometimes they have a problem. And the problem is trying to narrow down what they really want to do or what they are extremely good at so that they will run into paying customers, not any potential prospects, paying customers.
Well, that's a tough thing to handle because potential prospects, I mean, you know, if I'm developing business, typically I like to have a full pipeline, lots of prospects.
Yeah.
Okay. And one way I can do that is by saying I can do almost anything for almost anybody. I mean, that's going a little far, but I mean, that's a natural kind of reaction to developing business.
Yeah. To be able to use the word pipeline means you've been in corporate America. You work for a big company that has a gigantic marketing and sales infrastructure, that has people who already net in the prospects.
They're always asking me about my pipeline.
The seller, your pipeline. As an independent person, even for a boutique firm, you don't have that pipeline. Mm-hmm. Your pipeline is your ability to go out, shake hands, and kiss the frogs. That's your pipeline. So assuming that you can do that, you have the energy to do that, the inability to specialize, to be able to focus on a very narrow but sharp and clever and very intelligent focus so that people who need your help don't even have to listen too much about your sales pitch. They already know, you have what I need. That's what I'm talking about.
And they're
about.
Willing to pay a decent price for that value.
Right, that too. And I believe that the more specific your niche is or you can vocalize it, the better. I mean, there's a reason why I'm bringing up this topic because not too long ago, I gave a talk at the Free Library of Philadelphia talking to people who want to be entrepreneurs. They want to be on their own.
Sure.
And of course, many people are service providers. You know, there aren't that many manufacturers.
Yeah, as opposed to making widgets.
Running around.
Right, yeah.
Right, exactly. And then there's this nice lady who said, oh, I want to help put Africa and America together. I said, I love the idea. Yeah. The vision is wonderful, but that's not good enough. I mean, I, as my business, I've been trying to put China and America closer, but that is not a selling proposition because people will say, so what? You know, it's not enough. I want your opinion on that.
3.3 billion people. I mean, what do you do?
What do you do? So I actually, without, you know, spilling any beans, our guest in this episode of Money Matters, I believe, has a very, very sharp focus.
Okay.
And a very excellent example, an excellent example of what I mean by being focused, being to the point.
Yeah.
To the point where the people who need to be or want to be your clients already know in seconds, in a split second.
Well, let's help our audience by giving them a couple of examples maybe of what you mean in terms of that's a good way of doing it and maybe a couple of bad examples, another couple of bad examples, not quite, you know, Africa and America, but some other people you've run into. But you've met hundreds of consultants over the years, I know,
your
various activities.
I have too, but
maybe a couple of examples to highlight to our audience.
I think a good example is a friend of mine, Rick Schilling. I can mention the name.
I know him too.
He was a banker for many years. And he, just like many people in the beginning, really couldn't figure out exactly what his niche was until one day he noticed that one of his fort, really, not forte. I've learned that word. One of his strengths is to be able to find a person, a banker, a seasoned banker mm-hmm. for a bank who is on maternity leave. In other words, somebody, there was one day when he's trying to sell the a potential client mm-hmm. his banking services, and the client wasn't interested. And then finally, he said, okay, but before really leaving, he asked the man, well, is that all? I can't go anywhere with you? The guy said, no, not really. However, like not even thinking about mm-hmm. Rick Schilling, he said, I have a problem. I have a lady, mm-hmm. Very seasoned in a particular type of banking portfolio uh-huh. operations. I don't know banking right. terms, but
close,
Rick knows.
Close, yeah.
And, oh, she is going to be on maternity leave, and she may be away for 3 months, if not mm-hmm. longer.
Yeah.
And Rick said to himself, without saying anything, wow, I have a database.
Yeah.
I know exactly 4 persons yeah. who can do the work.
Yeah.
He said, how much can you pay? That's the beginning of his
new. Unfortunately, I guess that's why he never returned my phone calls.
It's really the yeah. ability to know what a client really
that's
wants
good, yeah.
and be able to
sure.
come up with something very specific, mm-hmm. I think is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many bad examples. You know, mm-hmm. people want to help people.
Mm-hmm. You know,
they want to make people happy.
Yeah.
You know, they want to help up with diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, right, diversity.
Lovely,
I know what it means. But
goal,
so,
yeah, noble idea.
Nobody understands. It's like, oh, I just mm-hmm. want some money. Can you give
yeah.
me any? You know, or I think one time I really PO'd a friend or a contact very much. The contact asked me, oh, I need an infusion of capital. I said, why don't you give Bill Gates a call? He was perfectly peed on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's no good. When a person is serious
yeah.
in founding a business, in running a business, mm-hmm. in growing a business, I believe the more specialized you are, the
yeah.
better.
Yeah. Well, another aspect of it, a skill that you have to learn, is finding out which prospects, potential clients
right.
you can really work with.
Right.
For example, you know, I've done non-bank type financing
right.
placements.
Right.
A company like you mentioned, somebody needs money, see if I can find some, usually a non-bank that make a riskier type of
right.
investment or loan
yeah.
type of thing. And I need to get charged a fee.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. So some people kind of like, they'll talk to you and that type of thing, but lo and behold, they're not willing to pay a fee.
That's no
so
good.
I've got to find that out
right.
real fast up
right.
front. And one way is to ask for a retainer of some kind. So they have to write a check of some kind, some amount, early on.
And
if they're not willing to do that, walk away, go on.
Very much related to that idea, let me just ask you a question from Bill Thomas from
yes.
the Money Matters
sure.
audience.
Yeah, uh-huh.
right. Bill Thomas says, well, Paul, are there good bank programs for people with bad debts?
Yeah, bad credit, yeah.
Bad credit,
yeah,
bad debts.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's the debt. The
yeah.
word is debt.
Well,
so you have
They play
two
together.
Minutes,
I'm an experienced banker.
Two minutes, or shorter.
Okay. Well, first of all, banks are not in the business of making loans to people with bad credit. By definition,
mm-hmm.
they're regulated. It's just not their business. They charge rates that don't reflect that kind of risk. There are plenty of non-bank lenders that do that type of thing, and they charge all kinds of rates, from a little bit more than a bank rate to kind of rates that make your eyes split. I mean, hundreds of percent on an annual basis, such as things like payday loans and whatever.
Uh-huh.
Now, what kind of programs would a bank get involved in, typically, with somebody with bad credit, or at least not stellar credit, okay? Depends on the kind of collateral. For example, the best kind of collateral there is, basically it's risk-free, is pledging cash to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
That is, a deposit account at that bank is pledged to that bank as collateral for that loan. You miss a payment, they start taking the money out of that cash collateral account, or maybe just paying off the whole balance from that cash collateral. So that's one way. So if you take a 3-year loan secured by cash collateral, you pay it on time, you're building up good credit. Okay, it happens. It's a way of doing it. Okay, another type of collateral almost as good to be marketable stocks and bonds. That marketable, they're traded on an active stock exchange, you're more than $10 a share, et cetera, et cetera. And again, they're not going to, the bank's not going to advance 100% of that, but maybe, you know, 70, 75, 80%. But it's a way of doing it. The other avenue, which I highly recommend, is there are nonprofit consumer credit counseling agencies or outfits, whatever you want to call them, out there. Plenty of for-profit ones, too. Watch out there. But there's some nonprofit ones, and I'll give you one, for example. I know it's been around for years in the Philadelphia area. It's called Clarify. And the person that's been running it has been there for decades. They have all sorts of programs, all sorts of people. A lot of them have to do with home mortgages. And there are other, there are a number of federal loan programs that are designed to help people with not stellar credit to get home loans. So there's some good things to look for. So I would Google a lot. I Googled some myself and came up with about an eighth of an inch thick pile of papers of various counseling agencies and other places you can go to how to get a mortgage with poor or bad credit. I think that's a good answer to your question. So there are answers out there. Be careful who you talk to, but there are some good answers. Thanks for asking the question.
Thank you, Paul. And here is how you send in your questions in for future programs.
You can have your questions answered on Money Matters. Please go to our website, money-matterstv.com. On our homepage, click on the banner on the right that says, Send Us Your Questions. While you're on our website, you can find information about our host and guests, as well as show notes and links about this show and past shows. Money Matters is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can listen to Money Matters while you're on the go. That website address, again, is money, M-O-N-E-Y, dash matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S, TV.com.
Welcome to Money Matters again. My name is James Chen, one more time. And our guest today, a very exciting person, his name is Michael Carwick. He is with the firm Simone Sajak Wealth Management Group. Now, before we see Michael's face, I need to tell you that he has a disclaimer he has to read because it's the firm's policy. Hi, Michael.
Thanks for having me. And I'll remind our viewers that the information presented here today is for informational purposes. So make sure you confer with your own tax or financial advisor before acting on anything. Any opinions that we express today, the speakers present today, is their opinion and not necessarily that of Lincoln Investment, which is my broker dealer. So thank you for letting me say that.
Very good. Very good. Well, good to see you. Good to know you, actually.
Thank you.
We had such a fun talking before the show. Really appreciate it. Now, first of all, let's get what I think is one of the most important but boring stuff aside. Important, but still boring. What is CEFT as a designation?
That is a little bit of a unique one. It's a fairly new designation in the financial industry, and it's Certified Financial Transitionist. So it's for people that really have wanted to experience the and help people in the personal side of financial planning, as well as the financial or technical side. We view the world as both having personal components and financial components that are related, but both are equally important, and both are equally complex, and both really need to work together for someone. And so it's someone who has both studied, we have a CFP first, and then you can go for the Certified Financial Transitionist, or the CEFT designation that I have. So it's really a holistic way of planning for people, especially those going through major life change, is what I would say.
Well, I understand the financial advice aspect of it, but the personal advice, what exactly do you
That's
mean
exciting.
There?
That's exciting.
You know, if you know anyone going through a major life change, you'll know that sometimes what they're concerned about is not what perhaps the financial or investment industry often focuses on, right? We talk about stocks versus bonds and U.S. versus international and even how long your money might last, which are all important things. Right. But when someone's going through a major life change, such as downsizing from a company or losing a spouse or a loved one or having an injury in the household where there's a monetary compensation component, but this money has to take care of someone in their life, you can see a whole number in any of those examples, a whole number of different things that might come up that are more personal decisions, lifestyle decisions. Where do they live and how is care delivered? Mm-hmm. And none of those had to do with European versus U.S. equity. So it's a different area of their lives that take equally as much contemplation and planning as the more traditional technical side.
I understand that one of your specialties is helping widows, like handle, deal with the transition of losing a spouse.
That's correct.
And
yeah.
Is the CEFT related to not just the financial technical side of helping the recent widow, but there is a personal side of helping her to deal with all the mental, psychological, emotional issues in combination with whatever financial advice, am I getting it right?
I think you said it very well, exactly. And widows in particular, you can imagine, it's one of the most dramatic times in someone's life. And by the way, we will use the term widows a lot today. That happens to be a lot of my client base, but not entirely. So this could be widowers. This could be anyone that lost.
To
clarify.
It doesn't have to be women.
Right, so I will say that I do happen to deal with a lot of women. I really enjoy helping them through that tough situation.
Okay, widows or widowers.
Anyone who's, widows, widowers, anyone who's lost a loved one or a partner like that will be experiencing many of the same things, right? So that's exactly right, is they have a lot of those personal issues that they're trying to sort through, and at the same time, they do have some financial decisions to make. So trying to get both of those two sides done at the same time is exactly what a widow, for example, would be wrestling with.
So, okay, so I see that you have expertise in two issues, the financial advice, the personal advice. Mm-hmm. So many of the things we run into is that usually there's like a bigger team involved. There's a lawyer, there's an accountant, that time. Do you get involved in that stuff too, or is it just you and those two expertises and the widow's on her own to deal with all these other things?
I smile at that because try to get involved and have the team work as a team. And mm-hmm. and we might call it a situational team because for each client, they might have a different accountant, a different attorney. And then one of the other questions becomes, who else should be part of that? If you want to call it a team or maybe just an information group where we're talking, is there an insurance agent involved? Is there someone in did the deceased spouse or partner own a business? And is there someone else involved there? So yes, studying teams and learning how to work together when you're not all employees of the same firm, but we are all on a case together for this particular client. That's exactly what we try to get involved with and trying to figure out what goes well and what doesn't go well and how we can improve the experience for the client and do it efficiently for the client as well.
Can you name three problems, real problems, issues that a recent widow or widower has to grapple with?
I think, and I'll
problems. In other words, not just you know, unhappy things. They really have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. For instance, if I'm a widower, I've never touched money. I have no idea. Like there's $5 million left. I mean, what am I going to do? Like, I really don't know. That's why I'm seeking help. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a number of things that jump out, and that's actually one of them. Absolutely, is if they haven't handled. And I see them sometimes the surviving spouse handled the checkbook, but not the investment side or the cash flow side or the pension, right?
Right.
So getting their arms around all of the finances, which they probably didn't handle all of the finances before most often, and sometimes they handled very little of it. So that is one of the absolute biggest issues. The other one is all of the stuff that they now own, two cars in the garage. They had two Social Securities, and they have to jump on that and make sure they understand which of those they're keeping, just all of the details around Social Security and other benefits, pensions. You have to see, does the pension continue, does it not? So getting your hands around not just the investment side, but also just running the household is another item. So there are plenty of things that they will jump into.
So in a way, for recent widows or widowers who kind of understand that they have, you know, some money, that's almost like, well, I wouldn't say winning a lottery, but it's just like now they have to deal with the money. In the past, it was kind of, okay, we can push this back. We don't have to worry about it now. We're together. We do things together. So, you know, right now, you know, after the death of one spouse, then the other spouse said, oh, I'm helpless. Is that also the personal side that you play a role? Because they need help. They need not just financial advice. They need some kind of a trustworthy support.
They do, and you know what else they need is they need some help in organizing. You just mentioned a few things there, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, as you could imagine. Mm-hmm. There are so many things they have to handle. I would say the number one challenge that they face, you mentioned challenges a minute ago.
Challenges.
The number one challenge is prioritizing, because their head is spinning with all of the things that they have to do. Their head is spinning with the emotional. I mean, let's get down to that.
Yeah.
It's this change in their life, the rug, whether it was anticipated or not, the passing of the spouse or partner. The rug was just pulled out from under this survivor, right? And yet, they still have to deal with a lot of important issues. So the number one thing I see that that we can help them with is helping them to prioritize. We would call it, we put together literally a now, soon, and later list with them.
Well, exactly.
Because they have to try and figure out what the urgency of each item is. Because there are things, we know this term from business and from life. Sometimes things are important, but not urgent. Sometimes they're urgent to take care of someday, but they're not that important in the grand scheme of things. Right. So figuring out which ones to tackle now and which ones to tackle later is the very first starting point. And telling people what they don't have to do now can be as important as telling them what they do have to do now. It really can take the pressure off to know they're on the right path, they're getting the right things done, and hey, that decision whether to sell the house or keep the house or where you're going to live next, let's understand that that goes on the later list. That you, I know people are chiming in your ear what you should be doing with the house and with the cars and all that.
Right.
You should realize, take a deep breath and realize that you can make that decision a year or two or five from here and you'll be okay. And when they realize that, you can see the pressure just leave them at least a little bit.
Yeah. So Michael's focusing on recent widows is a good example of a clear focus. I think that it's a very specific angle. By angle, I don't mean anything negative or bad, but it's just it's an issue that people are willing to pay for.
Do you get involved in, is it a transition, divorce situations?
Mm.
Yes, there are actually a lot of similarities, right? Because it's a major life change, it's difficulties, it's taking over a lot of knowledge you may not have done before. Yeah. They're fairly similar. Obviously,
a lot of finance issues involved. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of financial issues, lifestyle issues, and wellness issues for both of these things. It's how do you still take care of yourself when you know you're understandably going to be, if not depressed, because that is prevalent and people should be able to talk, and I'm glad they can today, whether it's depression, but there's still deep sadness and struggles that people can feel, whether it's divorce or loss of a spouse.
Failure. It's failure of something.
It's tough, and being able to have someone to bounce that off of,
So
that's very similar to what
we do.
Well,
here's another question. This may be a little macabre. Do you get involved in pre-planning? That is, the widow's not a widow yet, but maybe in a couple of years, it looks like she's on her way, or 5 years or whatever, things like that.
It's not at all macabre. It's a great thing to bring up, but it is one that people hesitate a little bit still today in talking about, especially a couple, hey, when
taboo,
I'm not here.
Some kind of a taboo subject.
It is a little bit.
Why don't you go drop off fast?
And I'm comfortable talking about it. Yeah, I have to remember that not everyone's comfortable. So when John's not here anymore, let's talk about what that looks like. I remember, John's in the room still, right?
Let's have role play.
So you have to bring it up delicately. But to your point about, and you began the show with a talk about specialties and going deep in an area and not doing everything for everybody.
Correct.
I think that's how I gravitated toward working with people going through major change, because that alone, there is so much depth that you can work with people in that area and the struggles that they face and the solutions. I'm not sure how people serve everybody in any industry, and certainly in mine. There's so much to do in depth in these small
areas. I have a question that I don't mean to be, I guess, too undelicate about it, but it may sound a little undelicate.
Go straight.
So how do you develop business? Do you read the obituaries?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a very fair, legitimate
question.
It is how do you get in?
I was worried he was going to be less delicate than his prior question.
There have to be a lot of con men, con women, scam artists, trying to focus. Mm-hmm. It's like they're vultures.
Sure.
Well,
aimless
chasers, there's money there.
Will.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how would a recent widow or widower believe that he or she can trust you?
Two ways, and neither of them have to do with me finding them, typically,
like
actually.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So no, it's a great question, because how would you find clients? It's a logical thing in any business, right? And so I have found them two ways, and one is by showing other professionals out there what I do and helping them in situations where they say, boy, that was Mike really made that easy for this recent tough situation. He made it easy for me, the accountant, the CPA.
Right.
He
you
know made it easy for us. So from other professionals
That's
is
legitimate.
The simpler answer.
Legitimate.
And the other one is word of mouth from widows, widowers, and partners who lost someone and realized that their experience was a little, I can't make all the struggles go away, but we can help reduce the stress and add some organization to their lives, and that takes the stress down by itself. So it's really word of mouth through either other professionals or through widows who've experienced that, and then they will know someone who's actually either has lost someone or someone who's partner spouse has received a diagnosis sometimes. That is often when people find me is they realize that this is in the cards, it's hard to talk about, but they know if we do some planning today, we can make tomorrow a little better for the survivor. So difficult situations, but that's what we're geared to talk about.
And how do you get compensated?
One of two ways. So we either do financial planning for a fee, or if we're helping them manage assets, we can get compensated that way in addition to or even instead of the planning fee. So it depends on the relationship, but we'll spell that all out up front. Okay. Once we figure out exactly what kind of work they'd like us to do, we can figure out if it's a planning engagement or if it's an investment management engagement.
And what's the relationship? You mentioned Lincoln Financial. You said broker dealer. Yeah, what does that mean to somebody out there, our audience?
Why Lincoln? What has that to do with Lincoln?
Well, actually for investors, for people interested in working with anyone in the financial industry, they should know what a broker dealer does, and I'll oversimplify it. So again, another disclaimer, really look into it. But there are two things a good broker dealer should do. Is one, they should provide resources for their financial advisors, and Lincoln Investment locally here does a ton of that. It's why one of the reasons I found them. Okay. So when I say resources, planning tools, information pieces that I can send out to clients when they're facing required distributions or losing a spouse, we have information we can send out. A lot of that comes from my broker dealer. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, they're also the back office that keeps an eye on all the reps and makes us do all of the ongoing education, all of the ongoing compliance things.
I was going to say.
There are big compliance department behind this.
It's a regulated industry.
Highly regulated, and Lincoln is very active in protecting our, really they look at our end clients as the ultimate clients. So they're financial advisors. I'm one of their financial advisors. Mm-hmm. So we're important to them, but the end client is who a good broker dealer should be there to protect and to provide resources for. And so that's what
but you are not hired by Lincoln, right? You are not they don't pay you're not salaried employees, you are not well, I've just said it, you're not hired by Lincoln.
That's right. I'm a representative. I would say I'm a representative with Lincoln, exactly. Right. And I can only be a representative with one firm. So Lincoln is the firm that is sort of my back office, if you will, with both resources and compliance and monitoring, which clients should want both of those from a good broker dealer.
Last question from
you. Last question. Any advice to the younger people in our audience? Should they get into this type of business? Is it a good business? What should they do if they wanted to?
It's an excellent business, although I found recently in talking to another advisor who described the kind of business. We didn't know each other well. We were having, just talking at a conference, and he mentioned this area of the world. I won't mention who he likes to work with, the kind of person, because I'll alienate part of the world out there. But anyway, he went on and on about what a great little specialty he had and how much he likes it. And he says, can you believe other people work with folks going through really tough situations, you know, losing someone or things like that? And it made me realize the answer to your question is find something that really you enjoy and have the temperament for, right? Because so this advisor that I mentioned and myself, neither of us was right or wrong. We both found a group of people we like to work with. Mm-hmm. And so I think financial planning is a wonderful industry. I do full boat believe with what you guys said at the beginning of the conversation today, which was find a specialty and work in it. So within my industry, there are so many ways to specialize and become a really deep resource for people. That's what people should do if they're thinking about getting into it.
Good advice.
This is wonderful. We are running out of time. I hope that we'll get a chance to see you again and talk more.
I hope so. Time goes so fast.
Right. But in the meantime, we're ending this program. But before I do that, I have to tell you that our next guest is David Wyman, actually Dr. Wyman of Wyman Consulting. He has a PhD, but not only that, he is a management consultant. I think it's a very good program. I hope to see you soon. Thank you.